Ew, I don't want to see you do it.
Hey, Katie, don't yuck my yum. Don't yuck my yum.
It's working for you.
Oh, it's working.
Ew, your face says it's really working. Hands where I can see them.
Not right now.
Welcome to Highly Questioned. I'm Dan Levitard. We've got Katie Nolan, Dominic Foxworth, and weirdly, Pablo Torre. Let's get started.
Yeah, let's.
What are your thoughts on the NBA players deciding to resume the playoffs this weekend?
I marveled at a couple of different things here. First of all, the trust between Adam Silver and his partners in that league is unlike in other places where you have two teams in the heat of a moment taking votes, talking about canceling the entire season because people are emotional, people are angry, they are in pain, and you understand that and you hear it. And yet still, even though your agenda is to protect the money, you listen to your players and they maximize this experience by bringing maximum attention to this, but not actually burning the sport to the ground, which would have been a danger for consumers who like the sport, for consumers who don't like the sport. The cutting off your nose to spite your face without any particular demands that can be reformed in the moment. They brought attention to this. They maximized the power. They are in the middle of a modern day civil rights movement and they are leading on it with their conscience. Going back to work is not a terrible thing when that's what you've accomplished before going back to work.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many parts of the story that I find incredibly interesting. But given my union background, I was struck by what happened to Michelle Roberts in the bubble with Patrick Beverley kind of shouting her down. And it just brings to mind how hard a job that is to be a union executive director in any situation. For the most part, players don't really care what you do until they care, and then they intensely care. The topics that they come to you on is never so simple where there's one side against the other. So trying to lay everything out, put it on the table and guide your group in the direction that you think is the best for everyone. Because as you can imagine, the guys who have made the most money tend to be the guys with the most power and leverage in those rooms. So the job of the executive director isn't always to follow the lead of the head guys. It's to make sure that everyone's voice is heard equally. So that's why I'm sitting here talking to you about what it means to lead a union right now and not actually working within one.
That situation with Michelle Roberts, I think we heard that in a Chris Haynes story that he reported that had a ton of really good, really interesting stuff in it. But it may speak to how cynical I am at this point and how little hope I have that I kind of saw that moment as hopeful because Pat Bev supposedly told her to, you know, shut up because he pays her salary is what happened. But then all of the players sort of immediately turned on him and were like, that's not cool. You treat her with respect. And like, I read that and was floored. I was like, we're doing it. Like, that's what you hope for. I know the on its face, it's negative, especially because it's a Black woman, a woman who's on your side fighting the same fight. And I feel like Black women are always forgotten in this argument and they're never centered and they just kind of put up with it and keep fighting. But then to see the way that everybody else reacted, to me it was a good story as a whole to show that people are holding their friends accountable and that Pat Bev will hopefully learn from this experience and not carry on with that way of thinking moving forward. In general, as for them resuming games, my initial thought was like, nah, keep going. But then I recognized that I'm not in those conversations. I don't know what they've gotten done yet. I don't know what their plans are. And my opinion doesn't really matter on this, quite frankly. So I think that whatever they're doing, we deserve to give them the agency to do it and to respect their decisions and to see what comes of it. They've done a lot more than any of us have done. We've just kind of sat here and talked. And so I think I support them and I will love to watch some basketball.
But I do enjoy sitting here and trying to suss out how they got to the decision to come back. Because the other part of the story between the lines that is so fascinating is how LeBron James has felt. And that's another Pat Bev quote that comes to mind. Because before all this happened, before the restart happened, Patrick Beverley said, if he hooping, we hooping. If LeBron James wants to play, we're going to play. This was not just a wildcat strike by the Milwaukee Bucks against the owners of these teams. This was a wildcat strike against the pathways of how NBA decisions are made in general. LeBron had no idea this was happening. That's also clear now. The Magic, the Orlando Magic, who were playing in that game, had no idea either. And neither LeBron nor the Magic necessarily loved being left out of that decision-making process for reasons we can all imagine, right? Presumably, they'd like to have been forming a united front on this. But the Milwaukee Bucks went out there pregame and then formulated what they wanted to do, which is A, like, okay, easy open door to critique. Well, what's the strategy? What's the plan? That would be LeBron's point in all of this, and I understand that. But the notion that they can be so defiant and so unilateral in how they made this all happen, keep in mind, LeBron James and Adam Silver's relationship is the story behind the story behind the story, right? That alliance is why we have not seen chaos like this. But here we have student council president LeBron, who some would say was either democratically elected or elected kind of like Mufasa in The Lion King. Like, yes, the most powerful guy should run everything. But that guy was left out of this. And so now they have to pick up the pieces together. And that's the story that's still unfolding now.
I can also, though, see why the Bucks would just sort of make a passionate decision in the moment. Like, I can think of a time when you take a stand against something and you don't think the right way to do this is to shoot out a group text and make sure everybody's on the same page. Of course, hindsight's 20/20, and it would have been better to lay out a list of demands to show what it is you were actually striking against. And it's important that we use the word strike because I see a lot of people saying boycott, which is usually consumer to business. And these are not consumers. These are the makers of the product. But I can see why they would just be like, this feels important to us, and so we're going to take a stand. I understand it from like a personal level.
I think it's natural for us to want to weigh in, but I think the first point that Katie made is that we don't really have skin in the game the way that they do, so it's hard for me to formulate a criticism on anybody from this point. But I do think that the Bucks should be protected in this. Like, this was a unique circumstance that uniquely impacted their team and their city. I don't think that it's appropriate necessarily that you need to call and check in if you feel passionately about something. They were willing to pay the price for that. That tends to be my way of measuring things, is like, if you are willing to pay the price, then you're fine with doing it. So if you want to say something, you want to do something, if you are willing to pay the price, which they were prepared to forfeit that game. It was then the Magic who decided to also sit out. They don't need to ask you permission to pay something that belongs to them, which is to win or lose that game. So I respect their ability to do that. And I think that LeBron is within his right to be upset by it, but they weren't wrong. They were fine with what they did.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie Show.
In this time of division, we can all be united, brought together by laughing at the Mets.
What do you find more significant? Brody Van Wagenen's comments about Rob Manfred or his apology?
All right, hold on a second. There are about 50 times in my professional lifetime where I have said about a story, that is the most Mets thing I have ever seen. One of those times, and I can't remember whether it was Vince Coleman throwing like a firecracker bomb at a fan or Brett Saberhagen bleaching a reporter, but I remember Dallas Green sort of addressing questions about it, and I couldn't hear him because Fred Flintstone was too loud on the Videotron sort of scrubbing his hair in a cartoon. And I have said since then, most Mets thing ever, about 50 times. This right here, where you've got the two owners of the team misspelling the general manager's name in the press release, castigating the general manager because this happened in a live microphone regarding Rob Manfred and the idea, the insulting idea, that a game was going to be moved from 7:10 to 8:10 just to make a pause for social justice. Let's listen to this.
Have them all take the field, then they leave the field, and then they come back and play at 8:10. And I was like, what?
Who's it?
Rob. Because Jeff's scheduling is going to be a nightmare, and there's so much at stake. And I said, Jeff, that's not happening.
They're not dealing with reality.
They're not playing, but that's Rob's instinct. And Rob, not exactly what you and I were talking about, at leadership level, he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it.
I don't actually care about the details of this. You've just got a general manager telling you how he feels about Rob Manfred, the commissioner of the sport, honestly, and he's since apologized for it, but the honesty is out there for all of us to hear, whether the details are right or not. Are you guys fascinated by this portion of the story?
100%. I just want to say thank you to the Mets, first of all, for being able to give us the thing we can kind of laugh about in a very serious situation. I think we all needed this, and I appreciate it. Dan, I would also like to submit for your list of most Mets things ever when their mascot got kicked out for giving someone the middle finger, even though he only has four fingers on his hand. Yes. That also, to me, was the most Mets thing ever. This story is fascinating, and the apologies that have come out you know, are wonderful in and of themselves. There's these little beautiful pieces of content because Brody's basically clears up that the idea of delaying the game an hour didn't come from Rob Manfred as he thought. It came from Jeff Wilpon. And he says that in his apology, but does not apologize to Jeff Wilpon. So he essentially transfers everything he said about Rob Manfred and says, I didn't mean to say that about him. Which basically says, I'm saying that about Jeff Wilpon now. And then the Wilpon statements, both of them misspelled Brody's name, as you mentioned, Dan, and then also just were like a parody of an apology. I found I was going through a memory box the other day. I don't know if anybody else has these, where you save old things. And I found a letter that I had written to my mom telling her that I was sorry that I hadn't cleaned my room. I'm a new woman now, and I love cleaning my room. And I'm not just saying this because I want Jill to sleep over tonight. I mean it. I love cleaning my room. And that is what those apologies felt like to me. It was like, we are so sorry. And we don't even know him. We misspelled his name. He does not associate with us. I don't think he's long for the Mets organization. I think he knew that by having that conversation in front of a step and repeat. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a beautiful story.
Yeah, I have to applaud Brody Van Wagenen here, Katie, because number one, Brody Van Wagenen, that's like the fake name I would call someone derogatorily if they were a lacrosse player cutting me off in traffic. Like, Brody Van Wagenen! But beyond that, it's the only way that I would believe that Rob Manfred didn't come up with this idea is his statement here. Brody Van Wagenen's statement here is the only way I could conceive that maybe Rob Manfred actually wasn't behind this, because any other way this happens, where Brody Van Wagenen says, you know what, it wasn't Rob, it was someone else, don't blame Rob. I'm like, well, it's obviously Rob. But he's saying that, no, it wasn't my boss's right. boss who had this idea. Right. It was my boss. And now I'm like, wait a minute. I yes. actually do believe that, which is also incredibly Mets.
I believe the one that we saw, because that was when there was a fly on the wall situation when he thought that potentially no one was listening. The apology and all the statements afterwards, they're all lies. So I do think that it's funny. And it's easy to point at Rob Manfred. But I will say that what we talked about in the first segment of the NBA trying to co-opt some of these demonstrations, it takes the teeth out of it. There's also the other side in that it takes the pressure off of the players. I could imagine being a baseball player in that moment. And the NBA has just taken this huge stand. Now you're proposed with this decision. Am I going to take a stand? And if I go out there and play, am I perceived as being on the other side of this? Like, that's a tough spot to be in. And I think offering this as a compromise seems like a way that you could cover your players in some way.
Yes,
I'm happy that the players took this and balled it up and threw it at him and said, you know what? We're just not going to play at all. But I do think that there is a window there for us to compliment Rob Manfred in this moment.
In this time of division, we can all be united, brought together by laughing at the Mets, just mm-hmm. together. In these troubled American times, we have that as our soundtrack.
Can we think of other things that Brody Van Wagenen can do besides be a lacrosse player that cuts
off
people
in traffic? Well, I had him with
traffic.
A sweater around his neck, you know, and sort of an important golf instructor type off hours, you know, drinking from a snifter.
No, Brody's a tennis name. He's a tennis instructor. Brody Van Wagenen with a sweater around his neck is a tennis instructor, I feel like.
He is identical twin that he got left out of a very wealthy
tech startup with. Yes, well,
that's a
little too on the nose, the van. No, but Brody Van Wagenen has a startup, and it's something that if any other, it's like a weed startup that, like, if a black person did it, it's like, this is elite. You throw them in jail for this exact thing. But he's like, no, hear me out. It's like you send a text, and then weed comes to your house.
We're disrupting weed.
That's Brody Van Wagenen.
I feel like, no, hear me out is Brody Van Wagenen's catchphrase. Brody Van Wagenen always says, no,
hear me
out.
Let me finish. Look, I think you're going to be on my side at the end.
Well,
here.
Before you jump to conclusions.
Listen, I don't know what Brody Van Wagenen does, but what I do know is that his dad did it first.
Yes, he is absolutely a third. He is the third.
Yeah, he is the
Brody
king
Van
of
Wagenen
nepotism.
The third.
Do you question if this hamster is dangerous?
All right, America might be upside down, but no one can accuse this show of not covering hamsters well enough. We've got a montage of hamster Hall of Famers here. Yes, this show covers all of these guys very well.
These are
this
drug addicts.
This one here is heavy, but then this is...
What you trying
yes,
to do, buddy?
Oh, bad
oh
idea.
My God!
Whoa. Yeah, bad idea. Whoa. Bad idea at that size.
Me trying to get in the jeans. And that's the reason why.
This is cruel. This is a little cruel and dizzying right here.
Can hamsters puke?
Wow. Oh, there we go. Now they're both out. All right. So that concludes the montage, but let's see what we have here. What do we have in our latest nominee to the Hamster Hall of Fame?
No hamster yet.
Oh, a murderous hamster. We've got a murderous hamster situation. All of those others were cute. This one is intent on killing.
Wow. I mean, I feel like you put all those clips together. Like, hamsters are drug addicts. Like, all of those things are things that drug addicts do. Like, they're resorted to violence. They're out of money. Gotta go get that fixed any way you can.
They're worse than that, Dominique, because I had hamsters, and I feel like I need to ritually remind America of this fact. The hamsters I had were not just drug addicts. They were cannibals and murderers because I had hamsters too.
This story is horrifying. Wait. I don't think Katie's heard this story.
I haven't. What's up?
This is horrifying. Oh,
okay. Let's all watch Katie's face. Everyone.
I'm a little kid. I'm growing up. I can't have a dog or a cat in my apartment. What can I have? I can get hamsters. I go buy hamsters. I get a wire cage. I get a plastic spinning wheel, like an exercise wheel, not unlike the one we saw in that video, except vertical. Attaches to the wire cage. So hamsters, what do? They procreate a lot. All of these hamsters are born in the circle spinning wheel, right? That's cool. Oh, a little nest. But you know what else hamsters do, Katie Nolan? Hamsters eat their young. So what happens? Well,
what's up?
The hamsters begin to eat their babies inside of the plastic translucent Patrick Bateman Ferris wheel of death. And what else happens? The hamsters decapitate their babies. And a spinning wheel that they're still exercising on.
Yes.
So the wheel is still spinning, forming a literal death rattle of hamster baby heads that I watch every day when I wake up and see, how are my pets doing? The answer, very badly. They're doing very badly.
This is why you are the way you are.
It explains so much.
It explains so much.
I can never trust or love again.
In New England, Patriots camp.
Look, we got Katie's attention. I'm going to say something shocking right now. College football starts this weekend. The first college football game is this weekend. But let's check in with Patriots camp. They've got a new quarterback, Cam Newton. That's just a couple of weeks away. What do we got here?
And that's why I do think they're going to use Cam Newton in some way, shape, or form. I could see them coming up, you know, with a red zone package of plays, or just to let him get comfortable in the offense. Because, you know, Stidham's going to be the starter. Because Stidham is going to...
You think he's starting week one, guaranteed?
Yes. Wow. Yes.
How is that a thing? Is that a thing that we think is going to happen? I just kind of assumed Cam Newton would be the quarterback. Pablo, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued because I can see why there are questions around Cam Newton specifically because he's Cam Newton, but also generally because Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick, doesn't want to tell us anything. But I must confess, there is no human being I've expressed more opinions about that I have no idea what they actually look like than Jared Stidham. I have no idea what that dude's face looks like, but I've been talking about him on television for a very long time.
Dominique, how about you? Are you intrigued?
Hold on, we really have college football games this weekend? That's really a thing
just
that's happening?
Just a game. Like, it's a Prairie View game, but it is, then Navy and BYU after that. But this weekend, it's just one of those small-time games.
I guess. I mean, no one knows what to expect out of Bill Belichick, I guess. I think it's possible that they could do this type of red zone package situation and then bring him along slowly and then hand him the job at some point in the season. But I'd be surprised if this doesn't become Cam Newton's team before midseason.
Katie, you're rooting for Cam Newton to be your starting quarterback, correct?
Yeah, of course I am. I also am rooting for my team to be successful, and I know that it makes the most sense to be like, we don't even know who's going to get the job, so that people have to prepare for three quarterbacks that we all know could identify in a lineup, especially me. Patriots fan, definitely know what Jared Stidham looks like. Point is, you're telling me that we have college football games this weekend, and yet, in see or no, you're bringing up Patriots training camp. Now, at this point, I've been abused on this show enough to recognize when it's coming. And so, screw you. What I've done is take over your show. And now we're just going to show three embarrassing pictures each of you.
I'm leaving.
There's Dom getting burned.
My butt looks great.
Hold on. What? That's not embarrassing. That's Saturday.
You look
Saturday
dumb.
Night.
Look at this. This
okay.
That's the most embarrassing photo of Pablo.
Hold on. Let me try and recreate that face for you right now.
We're out of time here. Katie Nolan, you can find her Sports with a Question Mark wherever you get your podcast. ESPN Daily for Pablo Torre. This bum Foxworth does not have a podcast, but you can read his stuff at The Undefeated. Thanks for watching. Have a good weekend.
Does my microphone work?
You're still failing at it.
Why? How can I be better at ASMR broadcasting?
Get quieter.
What if I just make this noise?
Ew.